Welcome to Budget Watchdog, All Federal, the podcast dedicated to making sense of the budget, spending, and tax issues facing the nation. Cut through the partisan rhetoric and talking points for the facts about what's being talked about, bandied about, and pushed in Washington. Brought to you by Taxpayers for Common Sense. And now, the host of Budget Watchdog AF, TCS President Steve Ellis.
Welcome to All American Taxpayers Seeking Common Sense. You've made it to the right place. For nearly 30 years, TCS, that's Taxpayers for Common Sense, has served as an independent, nonpartisan budget watchdog group based in Washington, D.C. We believe in fiscal policy for America that is based on facts. We believe in transparency and accountability because no matter where you are in the political spectrum, no one wants to see their tax dollars wasted. Having said all that, dear listeners, today we are in a position to wonder whether policymakers on either end of Pennsylvania Avenue actually see a clear picture of our nation's fiscal health. Is this economic reality or illusion? Let's consider President Biden's $7.3 trillion fiscal year 2025 budget request. The budget proposes a 4.5% cut in discretionary spending from the previous fiscal year and a reduction in budget deficits by nearly $3 trillion over the next decade. But just how rosy are the economic growth projections upon which this budget request is built? And what gimmicks are baked in here to create illusions in the out years? Joining me now to answer these questions and detail the specific tough choices that need to be made in Congress are TCS Director of Policy and Research, Josh Sewell, and Policy Analyst, Gabe Murphy. Welcome back to the podcast, gentlemen.
Hey, Steve. Glad to be here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's rock and roll. Josh, can you get us started here, please? Budget Watchdog faithful know that the FY24 budget resolution to go with the president's FY24 budget request never got passed. So what's happening with this? Wasn't the overall budget cap for fiscal year 2025 set last summer as part of the Fiscal Responsibility Act?
Yeah, so things are a little out of order. So right now, as a reminder, you have budget requests versus budget resolutions. The resolution is what Congress passes, what actually matters the most as far as setting the money that's going to be spent, and that's what governs Congress. So right now, we do have the top line numbers for fiscal year 2024 and 2025 agreed to back in June of last year. Yet here we are, at least as of this taping, still fighting about 2024 spending halfway through fiscal year 2024. So things are a little... we'll just say a little out of order.
You're out of order!
So just a little digression here, Josh. So what is the status of FY 2024, 6 months into the fiscal year?
Right. So half the bills, six of the 12 annual spending bills, were adopted earlier this month. And that covers about 30% of the annual spending in the discretionary side of the budget. The other six bills, including the big one, defense and Homeland Security, a couple of big ones, they are... well, I didn't check in the last 20 minutes, but any minute now they should be coming out. We are, I think, 36 hours away from a shutdown, maybe a little more when we're taping this. And so supposedly there's an agreement. They're writing the final text for these bills, and we should be done with doing the bills for fiscal year 2024 in the next couple of days. I'll believe it when I see it because we keep waiting.
Yeah, well, and I guess the House will move on this tomorrow, so far less than 72 hours since these bills have emerged, and then the Senate will make its way, and maybe by Monday, it sounds, which does seem to me like since the 22nd is when the CR runs out, that there will be like a weekend shutdown. Is that what the tea leaves are reading?
Yeah, it does look that way. So there will be a partial government shutdown, again, because six of the bills funding a lot of the agencies are already adopted. So even if they don't get this done super quick and there is a shutdown over the weekend, you may not see a lot of effects for many folks because National Park Service, you know, one of the big things when shutdowns occur is they tend to shut down the parks because you can't run it if you can't pay the folks who are employees. That was in the other bill that was already passed. So they won't be putting up barriers around the National Monument the Washington Monument and carting people off from coming to the national parks. So it will be a shutdown, it looks like, but whether you notice it now, some folks who work for the government will notice it, but it's the weekend. So, you know, the big $7 trillion ship will keep going, even though it's technically shut down.
Right. And your projection from 6 months ago that there was a 99.9% chance of a shutdown will actually finally become true. All right, podcast listeners, Budget Watchdog faithful. I promise no bait and switch. We're going to turn right back to the fiscal 2025 budget request. So sticking with you, Josh, what caught our eye? What are a few things, some nuggets that caught our eye in this budget request?
Well, you know, the budget does roll on. And so you know, even though we are 2 months past when you normally start this budget process on February 1st or so, the first week of February is when the request is supposed to come out. Well, we finally have it. And I did say it's about a $7 trillion in spending is what we anticipate in 2025. Much of that is mandatory. But on the discretionary side is where the president really gets to say what are his priorities and what's in there. And you just got to start any discussion about budgets is that budget requests from the president, they're aspirational. You know, they're not necessarily realistic. And so it's the president getting to put his mark on what he wants. And Congress is the one who's going to have to come back and actually do it. And so you can see some really interesting things in a budget. There's definitely some very rosy economic assumptions. This may come as no surprise, but I've never seen a budget that projects or predicts a recession, you know, and this one doesn't either. I don't know if you've ever seen one that said, yeah, we could anticipate economic growth going down at some point.
That would be quite a downer.
Yeah. And so it's important when you're looking at these to say no budget ever predicted the Great Recession. No budget ever predicted COVID-19 and the response to that. And so you got to take them with a grain of salt.
Right. I mean, they could hedge their bets a little bit more rather than having the rosy economic projections that they all seem to have and this sort of magic pixie dust that this budget is going to unleash America's great economic potential.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this isn't a knock on President Biden. This every single president, every single administration does a budget in a similar way. But I think the one that thing that does annoy me perhaps the most, there's a lot of things that annoy me, as you know, but may annoy me the most is when a budget assumes things that we absolutely know won't happen.
Right. Right. Well, because they can say whatever they want. Okay, Gabe, let me bring you here on this. You notice some positive changes, you know, and maybe they won't come to pass, but you notice some defense cuts, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that in there, although we did get a little preview of it a little before the budget came out. But the main news for me, at least, is that the F-35 got a cut in this budget request. The F-35 is the most expensive weapon system ever built, and this year's budget request cuts 15 of F-35s from what was planned in the FY24 request for this year. So that's going to save taxpayers over $500 million and probably a lot more in terms of long-term sustainment costs.
So Gabe, using your crystal ball, what do you think may have prompted this cut?
Well, I don't think I need a crystal ball for that one. I mean, this is one of the most well-deserved cuts I've ever seen. It's like I said, the most expensive weapon system ever built, but more importantly, its mission capable rate, that's the percentage of time that it can fly and perform at least one of its missions, is just 55%. That's abysmal. And, you know, there are several factors behind that. A big one is the fact that it, you know, was concurrently developed and produced, meaning they basically started building these planes before they finished designing them. And, you know, that's led to a lot of, you know, maintenance complications and, you know, costs and increasing, you know, the time that it takes to get these planes up and running. And that means that, you know, they're not always available to fly. So, you know, by that metric, it's really hasn't been a very effective program so far. And, you know, it's been plagued with a variety of problems, but one of the most stunning illustrations of that was when one of them went missing over the skies of South Carolina. This was late last year and the pilot ejected and the plane was on autopilot. So it just kept on flying. And, you know, I guess they actually put out, you know, a request to folks like, hey, have you seen this missing plane of ours? And, you know, I think after that, they probably figured why not lose a few more of them in the budget.
Yeah, that's a hell of a lawn ornament in somebody's yard. So, Gabe, any other cuts that you noticed in the Pentagon budget? I mean, it's massive, but, you know, we can look for something.
Yeah, there were a couple. So Space Force took a small cut, about 2%. But, you know, important context there is that over the prior three fiscal years, it doubled in size. So, you know, that's something that we've, you know, isn't totally unexpected with a relatively new military service branch. But some of the early estimates for Space Force suggested it would cost like, oh, you know, between $5 and $10 billion. This year's request is almost $30 billion. So we've seen that balloon, and I would be shocked if you know, this is the plateau I would expect in future years that aren't limited by the Fiscal Responsibility Act for it to keep going up.
to be clear that because the Space Force, as you point out, is relatively young, that was a projection back in like 2019, you know, when it was first created in the Trump administration to try to poo-poo anybody saying standing up a new military service, even if it's housed within the Air Force, like the Marine Corps is housed within the Navy, is going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's good to see that there's some restraint this year, at least on that budget. Another place that took a cut was the Navy's shipbuilding account as far as attack submarines specifically. They're requesting one less than they had previously planned. Now, you know, part of that may be because of the FRA, but part of it, I think, is because, you know, the manufacturers weren't actually producing two submarines a year as they had been requesting and planned. So, you know, part of that savings from this cut is now going to go towards supporting the submarine industrial base, which seems like, you know, a reasonable exchange, if you ask me.
All right. Thanks, Gabe. Josh, shifting back to you, one of the key proposals in the president's FY25 budget request is to implement a 25% minimum tax on the wealthiest 0.01% of Americans, those with wealth exceeding $100 million. What would this address? What would it be worth? And what's your prognosis?
Well, this is one of a number of proposals that the president makes to reduce our deficits. So we're running $1.6 trillion, $1.3 trillion, depending on the year, annual deficits. And the main reason is because we spend more than we take in revenue. And so this is an opportunity or suggestion by the president to raise a few hundred billion over 10 years to start to chip away at that annual massive deficit that we have. Again, this is one of those things where, whether you like it or not, it's not going to happen. We have Republicans controlling the House. We have a very narrow Democratic majority in the Senate. And I can tell you right now, with 99.9% certainty again, that this is not going to make it into legislative vehicle this year, because it's just not how the Republicans are going to go. So this is where we talk about making assumptions that you know are not going to happen. And that's where budgets get kind of irritating, because there are a few other tax issues where the president's assuming things are going to happen in the tax space that it's just not realistic to think that we're going to increase in some major way the tax burden right now. We're not going to undo the Trump tax cuts, which is what the budget also calls for some of those high earners and corporations.
Yeah, Josh. Well, similarly, our analysts noticed that the president is proposing reeling in tax breaks for the oil and gas industry. And this is his fourth budget that he's done so, but it's, you know, projected to generate $110 billion in revenue over the next 10 years by eliminating these tax breaks for these wealthy corporations, that some of which have been on the books for more than a century. And so there are a whole bunch of areas where they're pushing on this, and we support it. You know, we certainly have also called for this for well before there was a Biden administration. These are things where it's going to be tough sledding in the Congress.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a good idea. I don't necessarily think it'll happen right now, but at least the budget shows the potential savings we could get from doing this.
Right. So, Josh, since you are Mr. Agriculture, and though we've heard rumblings that a farm bill may be in the offing next month, it still seems like they can't get that over the finish line. But there is some budget-related items in the discretionary budget here related to USDA and conservation spending, reaching basically, it looks like, historic levels, at least in the request. So what's going on here?
Yeah, this is a continuance of what President Biden has done since he got into office in this space, which is to, as part of their focus on climate change and mitigating the effects of climate change, they've looked at increasing conservation program funding in the Farm Bill. And they do some of that outside of the Farm Bill. But this is the president continuing to say that agriculture as an industry, depends on exactly how you look at it, between 10 and 15, maybe 20%, depends on how you calculate it, of our greenhouse gases come from agriculture. And so you're not going to be able to solve the issue of climate change without providing some incentives to get them to clean up their emissions. And so the president is saying, hey, we want to continue this. We did a huge $27 billion injection into the Farm Bill programs through the IRA. And so the president's budget says we need to keep those funds focused on climate change within agriculture and put in a little bit more.
So, Gabe, you talked about some of the parts of the budget, the Pentagon budget, getting a cut, like the F-35, but others got a boost. Tell us some about that.
Sure, Steve. Well, you know, national security spending overall actually got a boost this year, despite the FRA. And so now it's up to $895 billion or $921 billion when you actually include the mandatory spending. So, you know, when you add the potential for more emergency supplementals, which is not unlikely, I think, in the next year, although they still haven't passed the most recent request, it's noteworthy that we're getting very close to spending more than $1 trillion a year on national security. And that's just, you know, as it's traditionally accounted for, some people prefer to include DHS and veterans expenses in that number. And, you know, they're certainly both related, but by that measure, it's been over a trillion for quite some time. That said, more specifically, in terms of other things that got a boost, we have nuclear weapons spending through the National Nuclear Security Administration, or NNSA, which is a division of the Department of Energy. They got a nearly 4% boost in funding for weapons activities relating to nuclear warheads. And part of that effort is about upgrading warheads for the new land-based ICBM, the Sentinel, they call it. And that's something we shouldn't be building in the first place. You know, land-based ICBMs may once have served a useful purpose, but at this point we have 14 Ohio-class submarines that carry like 90 on average nuclear, you know, missiles on them. And they're often equipped with multiple warheads. So just in terms of sheer, you know, nuclear explosive yield that we have in the rest of our arsenal, there's really no need for these land-based ICBMs, and they're also the least survivable leg of the nuclear triad. So, you know, that said, they're also, you know, on top of that, costing taxpayers an arm and a leg. I mean, the initial cost projections have ballooned so much that they actually triggered a breach of what's called the Nunn-McCurdy Act. And that's basically something that forces the Pentagon to go back and reevaluate its program when the cost of a program goes up by a certain amount. So, you know, I think this spending boost that we're seeing in here is problematic, and Congress should really, you know, scrutinize some of these decisions.
Well, and it's not just the subs. As you said, it's a triad. And so you also have the bomber, and actually they're trying to modernize all three legs of the triad, you know, replacing the Ohio-class sub with the Columbia-class sub and replacing the bombers with the B-21 Raider. And then obviously what you mentioned, the Sentinel, which is kind of huge cost overruns. And also, like you said, the least survivable leg of the triad. Josh, circling back to you, one of the big things that was in the Fiscal Responsibility Act was this savings, or not really savings, maybe initially savings, of cutting $20 billion from the increased funding for the IRS that was in the IRA. And so in the Biden administration's budget here, they agreed to cut the $20 billion in the Fiscal Responsibility Act. But what are they doing now? What are they saying now in the budget request?
Yeah, in the budget request, they are saying we should restore the full funding that we had earlier to the IRS, and which I don't disagree with that, but not going to happen because the Republicans are actually saying we should cut even more from the IRS. And so, and why this matters is not just because we think it's a good idea to adequately fund an IRS in order to serve taxpayers, and also to get to really reduce that tax gap, just to ensure that people who need to be paying are paying their fair share, not more, certainly not more than they need to pay, but also, this is another one of those areas where if you assume that funding is restored, then you can assume the savings that's going to come from that increased enforcement and that increased service. And it's a lot of money. So it's in the budget, they project $498 billion in increased revenue from restoring and maintaining that level of spending at the IRS. And that's a lot of money over 10 years. And so again, it's like budgets, you got to make assumptions, but you got to be realistic. And so it does show that if we made these investments, this is what you could potentially gain from it, but it doesn't mean we are going to get it.
Yeah. And I guess you could also argue that, you know, it's a good offense as well, like to be basically saying we're not going to, even though we agreed to this cut, we're not going to take it lying down, and we're going to flag again that it's a dumb cut that is actually going to increase the deficit rather than actually save money and have a deficient agency, the IRS, which is operating 60-year-old computer systems programmed in COBOL, which I'm sure some of our budget watchdog faithful have no idea what that is, and that's totally fine. But understand that these are incredibly important systems that we're all giving our Social Security information. We're all giving all of our Social Security numbers. We're giving all of our financial information to it. And the idea that you're not actually making it the most secure systems, the most up-to-date systems, is just ludicrous. All right, I'm moving this soapbox over. Okay, so Gabe, bringing you back in, we're talking about a really big Pentagon budget, but not everything squeezes into that treasure chest of money that they're asking for. So what are some of these off-budget items that seems to be in this kind of gray quasi-budget?
Yeah, that's right, Steve. I mean, every year when the Pentagon decides its budget, they make, you know, some hard choices about priorities and how to spend money. And one of the ways that Congress likes to get around that is by requiring each branch of the military and each combatant command to submit lists that are known as unfunded priority lists, or UPLs. And, you know, it's kind of a misnomer because, by definition, almost, if you have something that didn't make the cut for the budget, it's not much of a priority. But that said, I mean, this money keeps flowing in to the budget through Congress. And, you know, this year, for example, the United States Indo-Pacific Command is asking for $11 billion that was not included in the budget request. And that's just one of many combatant commands. And it's also up from $3.5 billion, and it's FY24 UPL. So, you know, these requests are on the rise, and they're really problematic. They undermine civilian control of the military because they basically, you know, do an end run around the Secretary of Defense, who you know, sort of has control over this budget. And then they also fuel wasteful spending. I mean, as just one example of this, we saw a request from the Air Force last year to accelerate funding for the E-7, a new sort of command and control hub for the sky, basically, that, you know, was trying to speed up the timeline of production on this. But Boeing officials have said that the most they could speed it up for, even with enough money, is about 6 months out of a 4-year timeline. And Congress only added about a third of what the Air Force requested for it, but that was still $200 million. So like, there's some question as to whether that money is going to lead to any meaningful, you know, speed up at all of production. Stepping back from that example, though, I mean, you know, there are things in these UPLs that are important, but either they're not priorities or they are priorities and they should have been included in the base budget in the first place, where, you know, they have to be weighed against other needs and adequately justified. That's just not what's happening with these lists. Thankfully, some members of Congress have been trying to push for a repeal of this statutory requirement for UPLs. And that's something we wholeheartedly support, but it has yet to come to fruition.
Thank you, Gabe. And I can remember when they used to call them unfunded requirement lists. And then that was said that by the secretary at the time that, well, if there were requirements, they would be in this massive budget. So therefore, they're not requirements. And so then they became unfunded priorities, but still problematic nonetheless, as you point out. So, Josh, you know, you've been looking at budgets now for well over a decade, more like 15 years plus. What are some things that made you roll your eyes?
The rosy assumptions we talked about are certainly up there, but there's a common thing that occurs in one part of the budget for the Army Corps of Engineers, Civil Works Division. This is the part that builds flood protection projects and environmental restoration and flood control throughout the United States. The president's budget assumes a cut. It would be about $1.7 billion less than what was spent last year is what he requests. But it's not going to happen. You're not going to cut the Corps of Engineers. Every single budget I've looked at, the president requests an amount of money that's somewhere between 15 and 50% less than what the Corps got the year before in just normal spending, not even counting emergency spending. And the Congress says, thanks, no thanks, and puts what the president wanted plus a ton more every single year. It's just another way for a president to get a little bit of savings that you can move somewhere else in your budget.
And to be clear, Josh, and also the Corps does navigation projects like port deepenings and locks and dams. But this two-step that goes on, I mean, it's Democratic presidents and Republican presidents. It's Democratic Congress's response and Republican Congress's response. I mean, this is something that is just part and parcel of the budget system, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we have a chart on our website, taxpayer.net, that you can look over the last, I think it's 10 years. And the delta between what the president requests compared to what was actually gone is getting smaller in the last 2 years, but it's still an unrealistic assumption. And of course, I couldn't go a podcast without talking about the Farm Bill. And in this president's budget, just like all of President Biden's budgets, he has absolutely zero requests to cut ag subsidies, which is not what happens in every other budget I've looked at. President Trump, President Obama, and even President Bush, if you go back that far, they always requested some amount of cuts to Farm Bill spending, especially in crop insurance, but even in Title I programs. Those cuts didn't happen when the Farm Bill came, but they at least laid out a plan that said, hey, this is something where we don't need to spend money. President Biden hasn't even pretended to want those cuts. He's just completely been silent on ag spending cuts and, in fact, is asking for more money in some places. So that's another place where I roll my eyes.
Budget Watchdog AF faithful, Josh referred to it, you know, the budget, our budget analysis, our rolling budget analysis is at our website at taxpayer.net. And there you're going to find a lot more information about a bunch of areas that we haven't even touched on here. It's a big federal budget. So you've got things dealing with biofuel tax credits. You've got issues dealing with carbon capture and sequestration getting support and other areas of national security and budget spending and mining law reforms, all sorts of different things that you can find there to your heart's content. Gabe Murphy and Josh Sewell, Thanks for representing the TCS team on the pod today.
Thanks, Steve.
Happy to do it.
Well, there you have it, podcast listeners. It's high time lawmakers develop a budget that is rooted in economic reality and not illusion. This is The Frequency. Mark it on your dial. Subscribe and share. And know this, Taxpayers for Common Sense has your back, America. We read the bills, monitor the earmarks, and highlight those wasteful programs that poorly spend our money and shift long-term risk to taxpayers. We'll be back with a new episode soon. I hope you'll meet us right here to learn more.